Kraken Pro is the powerful crypto platform for experienced traders who demand the best. With advanced charts, real-time market analytics, and lightning-fast trade execution, Kraken Pro empowers you to trade your way. Customize your setup and make every pixel count by rearranging and stacking trading modules in a way that makes sense to you. On Kraken Pro, you have the freedom to put your favorite market analytics and execution tools exactly where you need them. And whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, Kraken Pro has everything you need to navigate over 210 plus assets with confidence. Join the thousands of seasoned traders who trust Kraken Pro. Visit realvision.com/KrakenPro. What will push Powell to cut? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'm Maggie Lake. With me today is Darius Dale, founder of 42 Macro. Hey there, Darius.
Hey, Maggie. How are you? It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just looking across the market, what a difference a couple of months make, right? Investors started the year pricing in a series of Fed rate cuts, and those expectations really seem to be in play now. We had a Fed official speaking today. We had some economic data. How are you thinking about the economy here as you look across all your indicators?
Yeah, great question. So still resilient in our opinion. The primary reason that asset markets have responded generally well and favorably to the backup in interest rates, both across the long and short end of the curve, is because the economy remains resilient. Recall that we authored the resilient U.S. economy theme back in the summer of 2022. The preponderance of data suggests that theme is persistent. On top of that, we have a Fed that continues to guide towards easing monetary policy over the medium term. So you have a at or above trend growing economy, and you have a Fed that's likely to pour more sort of kerosene on the fire there over the medium term. And that's obviously been a bullish cocktail for asset markets.
Are they, can they ease though? Or what would enable them? We said what would push him to cut, but what would lay the groundwork where they can do that? Because they presumably, if the data stays this way, it's going to be awfully hard for them to do that. And I think that's what an increasing number of investors are getting worried about based on what's coming in. Do you see the data changing? Are they going to change their parameters? What would enable them to actually deliver on that easing?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal question, Maggie. And I don't think we learned anything particularly new in Powell's fireside chat today. It sounded like, quite frankly, it sounded like he was just reading off today's leadoff morning note, which we published this morning. The reality is we've seen a sort of temporary pause or reprieve, if you will, in the immaculate disinflation theme, which has also contributed to the upside risk that we've experienced and benefited from here in asset markets. In terms of what would push in the cut, we need to get back to data and on a trending basis that says immaculate disinflation's here. We are moving towards we're on a credible path towards sustainable 2% inflation. Now, we don't think we're ever going to achieve that credible path of sustainable 2% inflation. But again, that's multiple quarters away in terms of having to deal with that as asset market participants. Right now, we're continuing to deal with, some evidence of sticky inflation. In fact, I put together a few charts for you guys. Brian, if you throw up slide one this week, so obviously the last few CPI PC deflator reports showed, pretty significant accelerations in the 3 and 6 month annualized rates of change of CPI and PC deflator inflation. That's something we talked about the last time I was on the show. So what we've learned since then here in slide one in particular is that, immaculate slackening in the labor market, i.e. the loosening of the labor market continues to remain ongoing, but we're actually starting to get worried about this apparent bottoming in turnover. So if you look at the second and third panels of this chart where we show the private sector hires rate, that actually ticked up from its cycle low to 4.14%. And then we have the private sector quits rate, which is now trending or sideways unchanged at 2.4%. Now, these are good levels from a levels perspective. They're at or below trend. And the reason that matters is on slide two is because we know that workers that change jobs tend to experience much faster wage growth. So in the top panel, we show the Atlanta Fed's wage growth tracker for job changers, blue line, and job stayers, red line. And then on the bottom, we show the ADP wage growth tracker for job changers and job stayers. And as we can see in both panels, the long run mean in both time series of each of those time series indicates that people who change jobs, i.e. who are actually in the labor market, tend to experience faster rates of wage growth. So, the fact that we're starting to bottom, going back to slide one, at a decent level from a server perspective, but the fact that we're no longer improving from a turnover perspective tells us that we might be running out of steam with respect to the disinflation we've observed in wages. So that's a bit concerning, which means we do need to start seeing data on a very near-term basis that says, okay, that was a temporary blip. We're getting back to that disinflation, and we do believe that is likely to be the case.
So you do see, is it going to come from the labor market? Will that be comforting enough from the Fed? Or are we likely to get this mixed picture? Because now it seems like we're back on, you know, potentially having a market that's going to react to that inflation data or price data because they're worried about whether we get the easing. In fact, Bob is saying in the chat, I doubt any rate cuts this year. And that does seem to be the concern that's bubbling up.
Yeah, and that's the appropriate concern to have. The reason it hasn't had a material impact on risk asset markets is because the economy doesn't need rate cuts. This is a very resilient economy that's getting, you know, again, it's the economy's on fire and the Fed is talking about pouring gasoline on the fire. If they take away the gasoline, the fire still persists. It's just not going to be as big as it would have been had they poured the gas on. But the reality is we experienced the rate cuts already, by the way. They got priced into the forward rate curve. They eased financial conditions. The easing of financial conditions caused this pick up in growth and inflation that we're currently observing in the data. And this, you know, modest tightening of financial conditions since the lows of what was priced in and from a policy rate cutting perspective is likely to cause inflation to slow in the coming months and quarters. The reason we have confidence in that is for three specific reasons. Number one reason is on slide three, Brian, where we show non-farm productivity growth that remains above trend, whether you look at it on a quarter-over-quarter SAR basis or on a year-over-year SAR basis. And the reason that matters is on slide four. If sustained, that productivity growth, that above-trend productivity growth should continue to perpetuate that immaculate disinflation. And the reason we say that is because productivity growth is sort of the key that unlocks the potential of the economy in a way that allows at or above-trend economic growth to not be inflationary. So in this chart, we show the blue line on this chart is the private sector average hourly earnings, year-over-year rate of change of that minus non-farm productivity. And what we see is that, you know, it's typically noise, but whenever you have a big spike in that metric, i.e. wages are growing much faster than productivity growth, you tend to have big spikes in inflation. That's the red and blue lines in the chart. And so as long as productivity growth can stay at or above trend, we have continued disinflation in wages, which we should based on the level of turnover in the labor market, that should keep, you know, the trend of immaculate disinflation intact. The number two reason we have of the three reasons that we believe that immaculate disinflation is likely to persist, Maggie, is on slide five. We have a tremendous amount of sheltered disinflation in the pipeline. And so if you look at the observed home price index, you know, the values on a lagged basis, or sorry, you look at the observed home price disinflation that we've seen on a lag relative to the observed shelter CPI or observed PC housing deflator inflation, you look at the 18 to 24 month lag, we're kind of on the precipice of when shelter disinflation should really start to materially show up in the reported time series. So that's another data point that gives us, or at least another fundamental dynamic in the economy that gives us confidence that immaculate disinflation, which is on the ropes, is not quite dead. And then lastly, we just have a series of high frequency leading indicators that give us confidence in this view as well. So we'll start with what we got today on slide six, Brian, which is the ISM services report. So, you know, we have leading soft data, you know, so at 42 Macro, one of the things I think we do that's very different and very helpful for our clients is we sequence every single economic variable that gets released for not just the U.S. economy, for all the global economies. And we try to piece the qualitative puzzle together in terms of what's likely to happen on top of actually having some very, very robust forecasting tools. But in terms of piecing the qualitative puzzle together, you know, today we got the ISM services PMI report. We saw the prices component of that tick down. That's the top panel there to the four-year low. It's now below its pre-COVID trend, which suggests that we should see services inflation, you know, kind of catch down to that on a lag. And then we looked at the percentage of respondents reporting slower supplier delivery times. That number hit the lowest level we've seen since 2020. It's a four-year low as well. So we're seeing this sort of disinflation in leading indicators. You see the same thing in the NFIB survey on slide seven. You see the same thing in consumer inflation expectations on slide eight. And so when you sort of piece together that puzzle, productivity growth remains above trend and we have at or below trend turnover, so which to sustain, you know, disinflation in wages and or at the bare minimum make wage inflation not be inflationary from a consumer price inflation perspective. Number two, shelter disinflation should accelerate over the next couple of quarters. And then finally, the leading indicators continue to point arrows down with respect to reported inflation. This is why we continue to have confidence that this inflation is on the ropes, but not dead.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on The Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Kraken Pro is the powerful crypto platform for experienced traders who demand the best. With advanced charts, real-time market analytics, and lightning-fast trade execution, Kraken Pro empowers you to trade your way. Customize your setup and make every pixel count by rearranging and stacking trading modules in a way that makes sense to you. On Kraken Pro, you have the freedom to put your favorite market analytics and execution tools exactly where you need them. And whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, Kraken Pro has everything you need to navigate over 210 plus assets with confidence. Join the thousands of seasoned traders who trust Kraken Pro. Visit realvision.com/KrakenPro. Few investments make a better long-term hedge against inflation, depression, and economic downturns than precious metals like gold and silver. Plan for the inevitable and protect your environment savings with a gold-backed IRA from Noble Gold Investments. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They have secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Gold remains steady when inflation is on the rise and the dollar is in turmoil. Its value doesn't just hold, it increases during inflationary periods. And unlike money, gold can't be printed. It's your shield in times of economic uncertainty. Invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision.
Yeah, I like that, on the ropes and not dead, because it is a kind of a fluid situation. And
very
so, you know, bears watching, which I know you always do. And I love that you bring up productivity, Darius, because it's so important. And not enough people are talking about it. And I know, again, the jury's out, right? Can it continue? Is it here? Is it really coming from technology? Or is this something that might roll over? We don't know. But I think it's so important to bring that up, because that's like one of the really important keys here. And you know, it's something the Fed's watching as well. So what does this mean for bond rates? Because this is the, you know, the higher for longer camp is having a resurgence right now because of the kind of scares we see in inflation, because people are starting to ratchet back those Fed expectations. And we've seen that 10-year yield creep back up to 4.3. It's at its highs for the year. And Christopher in the chat commenting, decent chance that Jim Bianco will be right about a 5% 10-year yield this year. Do you think we see enough either concern or actual reason to push those yields higher, or are we likely to range here as we wait to see about that immaculate disinflation story?
Yeah. Excellent question, Maggie. Excellent question. And so the answer, you know, without knowing, you know, the sort of, I don't know, the river card on all the key data points we're likely to receive as investors over the next month or so, I would say we're probably range bound and maybe even flat to down over the next maybe quarter or so because of the persistency of the immaculate disinflation theme. However, we are going to, we believe, and much like Jim Bianco believes, is that the longer term trend in interest rates is probably higher because, again, we have this fundamental view that's based on the confluence of our quantitative research and our econometric forecasting tools that says inflation is probably going to bottom at a level that is inconsistent with 2% inflation. Mm-hmm. That's probably a Q3, Q4 event. We expect markets to start to sniff that out and price that in Q3. And so, you know, we think the, a year from now, bond yields are probably higher, but over the very immediate term, maybe flat to down if we, the next series of data points we get, which we'll all sequence a report and unpack for our clients at 42 Macro, if those data points support immaculate disinflation, flat to down. If they do not support immaculate disinflation, you've got to pull forward your expectation of a market regime transition from the current risk on reflation regime that we're in to something like risk off inflation, which we ultimately expect to come anyway. You just might have to pull that forward. And so,
yeah, this is where time frame is super important. So thank you for laying that out, Darius, because Darius is servicing clients and thinking about it himself on a, you know, not necessarily looking out long, having to sort of think about the transition to that. But if you do have a longer perspective, you can take that into consideration.
100%. 100%. You always, I think you're among the world's best at coaching investors to think about investing from a time horizon perspective. Understand your time horizon. Understand the catalysts that are going to impact investments on your time horizon. Make sure that the risk you're taking in your portfolio are correlated to the catalysts that are going to occur on that time horizon. Don't, you know, you never want to have time horizon mismatch. Long-term position with short-term catalysts, short-term catalysts with long-term positions. That's how you can build yourself up as an investor. But just one final thing on this particular topic. We are on the precipice of a significant series of inflation data points that could give us some because the macro disinflation is on a rope. I think the next month or so of data is really going to may have material market impact more so than it otherwise would. And so just kind of rattling this off, next week on the 8th, we get the New York Fed's inflation expectations as a leading survey data point. We get the NFIB survey on the 9th as a leading survey data point. Obviously, CPI on the 10th, EPI on the 11th, those are hard reported statistics that'll confirm or disconfirm the nascent uptrend in annualized inflation. We get the University of Michigan inflation expectations on the 12th. We get the PC report on the 26th, followed by the conference board inflation expectations on the 30th. So any one of these data points or the collection of those data points will either push immaculate disinflation through the ring, off the ring, through the ropes, mm-hmm. or it'll allow immaculate disinflation to start battling back and really start to regain some mind share amongst market participants. And if it does that, then the sustainability of the current risk on market regime will be enhanced and we'll, you know, get back to making money again as investors.
That's amazing. Hope you all wrote those down. Don't worry if you didn't, I did. And we will obviously cover them and remind you all, but that's going to be a really, really important week. And I think you're right, because the conversation has shifted. So you're going to get momentum either one way or the other. And we're kind of like teetering there right now. And that's something that we've been pointing out and flagging throughout, as I know you have as well. I just want to point out a comment that Paul made. So we know Darius is among the best with these amazing charts that he has that they put together at 42 Macro. And Paul just pointing out, Brian, whatever RV's paying you, it's not enough, because Brian can keep track and keep with up with Darius Dale, who, you know, is a fast talker. So it's a beautiful combo we're seeing on air right now.
That warms my heart, because Brian is the MVP, man. You crush it, you and Nick, man.
I don't know if you can see Darius, but he's keeping pace with you as you're calling him out. And Nick is also behind the scenes making the magic happen. So
by the way, totally sidetracking us here, but apologize for this, but congratulations. You know, I saw the tweet. It was like the 1,000th episode. Big time, man. You guys have done a real service for the global investing community. And you, Maggie, Brian and Nick, you guys have just been awesome. So thank you. And I appreciate being here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the team tweeted it out too. You're one of our MVPs who's been on a lot. They did a little like number thing of all the different episodes and guests we've had on and all that kind of great stuff. Not to mention the heads up that you've all given people, because you're always, all of you are ahead of the curve all the time and really flagging stuff to people that you just don't see in a lot of traditional coverage, which is amazing. And has given a lot of people a great sort of advantage to take up, which we all need, right? We all need a leg up, because we gotta make that money and keep it for the future peeps in our life. So
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that we do this 6 days a week for 42 Macro clients. So just
yes, absolutely. Right. We know that you never stop working, Darius. So I wanna we went from talking about bond yields, where there's really critical point. And the reason, of course, that's important is because that's gonna affect a lot of other markets. So let's talk about those flows. And we have some questions as well. But one of them is, of course, I want to get your thoughts on what's happening with Bitcoin, because we know we have the ETF. There have been some questions about what it's correlated to. Is it going to move like a risk asset or not? We saw a sharp drop. I want to get your thoughts on the price action there. But before that, Raul sat down with Arthur Hayes last week, very end of last week, and he made a really interesting point about these huge inflows we've seen into the ETFs that I really haven't heard people talking about, into the spot Bitcoin ETF in particular, all of the new ones that are out. Let's have a listen and we'll talk on the other side.
There's obviously this zeitgeist of too much federal spending. I mean, Jamie Dimon rages on about it every fucking quarterly report. Oh yeah, the U.S. is spending too money. U.S. is spending too much money. Well, instead of them getting fucked by them being forced to buy bonds that are negative real yielding, well, let's have a product that we can throw our clients into and make fees that's still within the system. And that's why I think these ETFs are now being embraced, which is, hey, here's this crypto derivative. You don't actually get to use Bitcoin because you can't withdraw it, you can't even redeem it. You want to redeem, you get dollars back in these ETFs, not Bitcoin. And so it's just a way to put all this, these people who want to get into this crypto life raft, but don't want to put in the real work and deal with private keys and, you know, OPSEC and all the things. I mean, it's annoying, but again, freedom isn't free. And here's this ETF. You can subscribe to it through your retirement account, your pension fund. You can buy it on a stock exchange. You've got all these, you know, respectable looking folks selling this to you now, saying this is a way to diversify against inflation. And the banking system just reaps fees. And that, we've seen how successful it's become. So I think there's going to be a Bitcoin ETF, an Ethereum ETF, a Solana ETF. Regardless of what any politician says, the banks know this is their way to stave off the effects of being forced to buy these bonds that are bad deals for them.
It's such an interesting perspective. We've been talking a lot about either why individuals might want in or why the SEC doesn't will it or won't it. This was a kind of an interesting take on why the banks are running toward this business. That full interview, by the way, and they cover tons of stuff, is available on our website. If you are not a member, sign up now. Brian will drop a link in the chat, and there might be a QR code that we'll put up, but lots of ways to get your account going. So Darius, we saw that, you know, a little slow at first, and we saw that big run up on the back of the success of the ETFs partly. And now we did see a big pullback right at the beginning of this week, back down to 65,000 for Bitcoin. Does it feel like this is consolidation? Is it part of risk off? Do you feel like there's a more serious correction coming? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're very much in a correction. I mean, it's obviously been very muted in the equity markets, but we've seen deeper pullbacks in different asset classes, notably Bitcoin over the last few weeks. You know, one of the things we've been highlighting over the past month or so in terms of our positioning model is some of our tactical positioning indicators got stretched. If you think of things like the AI bulls bear spread, the AI survey, if you look at, implied correlations, you know, getting to, you know, basically all-time lows, all these sorts of things that give you an indication that, hey, markets are a little bit over their ski tip, so it won't take much to catalyze a correction. And this is why we're so hyper-focused on, you know, sort of the next series of data points, because again, if immaculate disinflation gets knocked out of the rain, this correction is going to become material and deep, because it ultimately means that we're going to start to lose not just, you know, the will they, won't they on 3 rate cuts this year, or is it July, that parlor game, which is, in my opinion, which is the complete sideshow. The real show is about where is the forward rate curve going to be for 2025 and 2026 by the end of this year and by the end of next year. And so in our opinion, we think that forward rate curve is going higher, but we don't necessarily think it's going higher from this data point, from this starting point today, because we ultimately believe that immaculate disinflation will survive that gauntlet of economic reporting. If it does not survive the gauntlet of economic reporting, you got to pull forward your expectations of a transition from a risk-on reflation market regime to a risk-off inflation market regime. And that's a big, big change in factor leadership that I think a lot of investors will be overbearing.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Yeah, so unprepared, so potentially short moves on that. But either way, it's coming. You just might have more time to get ready for it, and it might be more telegraphed.
Bingo, you said it better than I could, Maggie. Thank you.
Right. Okay, so that's super important to remember if you have a lot of exposure to risk assets in your portfolio, whether it be Bitcoin or tech or anything that fits into that. We have so many good questions. I want to get to them, but just a note for those of you who want to dig into more of what's happening in crypto in that space. Ash and our chief crypto analyst, Jamie Coots, did a deep dive into both Bitcoin and importantly, Solana. I know you all know that is the best performing asset by far this year. You know, a good question to bring up, and we will in coming days, is can that continue if we get into a risk off type of environment down the road this year, or is there enough activity and sort of bullish fundamentals going on in that market to offset that? That'll be a key question, which we'll look at. They did a great, great, great piece on that. Jamie's doing some unbelievable work. So check that out on the pro crypto tier. And there's a whole thing about taxes, which I hate to bring that subject up, but it's a tricky one. And so if that's something that's of interest to you, go check that out as well. All right, let's get to some questions. Taxes in particular for crypto people, just to be clear. Okay. So Rick asking a terrific question. Is the inverted yield curve still a thing or not so much anymore?
No, it's definitely a thing. In our opinion, just based on this developing sticky inflation view we have, we ultimately believe the Fed is going to have to catalyze a recession to get inflation sustainably back to 2%. Now, that recession could be a 2025 or 2026 event, but ultimately we think the yield curve remains inverted because ultimately the bond market and various cohorts, market participants within the bond market understand that we're not going to get the Fed's desired inflation outcomes, not with an economy that's rocking and rolling, that's been on fire as much as it has been. We're still growing well above trend in terms of GDP growth. We relearned that with last Friday's PCE report. So in our opinion, you know, it's you know, we can land the plane safely at something that probably looks like 3% inflation or 2.5% inflation. But if we bottom there and start to reaccelerate from there, which our models are calling for in terms of Q4, Q1 of next year, if that's the case, then you're going to create, you know, the structural mean in the time series is going to gravitate higher over time. And you're not going to have a mean that is close to 2% anymore. You're going to have a mean that's 2.5%, 3%. And maybe they're fine with that. And if they're fine with that, then they're probably not going to, they're going to push through easing monetary policy in the face of that. But based on everything we know today from their forward guidance, it's unlikely they will be as dovish today, or as dovish as they are today in the face of sticky inflation. They still believe in immaculate disinflation. That's what's supporting markets right now. One of the things that's supporting markets right now.
Yeah. So this brings up David's question, I think, which is PMs, precious metals and commodities are on a tear. What is that telling us about inflation? Is that an early indicator that that inflation cycle is turning, or are there just other issues at play with commodities, whether you're looking at gold and safe haven concerns or whether you're looking at oil and geopolitical issues? Do you think that that swing in commodities is an early indication that that disinflationary trend is in trouble?
Maybe not in trouble. So I would look at it from a different perspective and take a more global view. Back in mid-December, we offered the theme that China would front-load policy support for its economy early in the calendar year of 2024. That has come to fruition in spades. And then in January of this year, we offered our green shoots globally theme, which is calling for stabilization in all the major economies in the world. And more importantly than stabilization, a series of economic surprises. Remember, we talked about this back in January on the show.
Yep.
And so that combination of China front-loading policy support, stabilization in the Chinese economy, the Japanese economy, the European economy, many of the major economies in the world. In fact, if you go to slide nine, Brian, go to slide nine, where we have our global liquidity monitor, second group of columns in that chart, we show the trends of the composite PMI time series for all the major economies in the world. And they're all trending higher with the exception of Canada right now. And so that is in a nutshell, that's exactly what green shoots globally looks like. And we were obviously out front of that. And so in our opinion, we think the stabilization and the upside surprises we continue to see across most of the world's major economies, particularly the four big ones, in our opinion, is what's driving the improvement in commodity prices on top of the front-loaded policy support by China. So we expect commodity prices to continue rising. At some point, they're going to rise to a level or rise at a pace and or both that causes investors to get materially concerned about goods inflation starting to offset some of that accelerated shelter disinflation that's in the pipeline, but I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, that's a great, great thing to bring up because Brian, Darius, answering your question before you even heard it, because Brian was asking, how is worldwide liquidity looking? And it sounds like it's looking good because China's stimulating and these economies are growing. The issue is you're also getting a move on inflation with that. But is that a correct way to interpret that, Darius, about worldwide liquidity?
It's been the correct way to interpret that. It may not be the correct way to interpret that. You know, if we get, you know, China started to ease up off the gas pedal, because, you know, right now they're kind of really the dominant driver of global liquidity. They mm-hmm. weren't in the early stages of the upturn in global liquidity. You know, I would argue the improvement we've seen in global economy and the easing of U.S. financial conditions and obviously the easing of U.S. liquidity conditions vis-a-vis the TGA and RRP were primary drivers. Over the last couple of months, China has been kind of the lone primary driver. So we have our eyes very much focused on the improvement in the Chinese economy. And if it improves to a rate or to a level or bias by a rate that causes the PBOC to say, okay, you know, coast is clear, everything's done, we're going to have problems from a global liquidity perspective. So the key data points to watch over the next month or so, on the 15th of this month, we get Chinese GDP, the monthly hard data, and the property market data. The property market data, in my opinion, is probably the most important of those economic releases, because that's where we've seen the biggest drag on Chinese economic activity. given that property is 25 to 30% of Chinese GDP. And then on the, I want to say on the 10th, the day we get our CPI report, China reports its CPI and PPI inflation that day as well. So if we see, you know, signs that China's having a robust reflation style recovery in their economy, it may be the case that the PBOC kind of, which has been kind of the lone wolf now in this uptrend in global liquidity, maybe they have to step off the gas a little bit. Them stepping off the gas a bit could cause some problems in asset markets from a liquidity standpoint. But again, you know, these are, you know, we're very early innings in having to have this conversation. You know, I don't want to make determinations now. One of the things we do that's helped kept our clients on the right side of market risk at 42 Macro is we respond to critical inflections in the economy and asset markets in real time, as opposed to what most investors are doing, no offense, is incorrectly anticipating those changes all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, exactly. And so that's, we're much more of an institutional macro risk management shop as opposed to, you know, Twitter macro, which is, I think, therefore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really, really good distinction. And Kirk, I think he just answered your question. Kirk was asking of the indicators you track, and there are many, anything reversing that's grabbing your attention. I think Darius just gave you an idea of the things that he's watching closely for that reversal, rather than anticipating what he thinks is going to reverse. But he, you know, zeroing in on some of that inflation, some of that China data, which will indicate their stimulus efforts, I think is really important. By the way, a note for all of you, we have Michael Howell on the RBGP on the daily briefing tomorrow. Yay, we love Michael. So we will, we will talk all things global liquidity with him as well. So make sure you roll up for that. So Doug asking, Darius, do you think the DXY is also range bound short term?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen enough information to say that some of the themes that have been driving the dollar, at least lower on a trending basis, have unpacked themselves. In our opinion, there's nothing more bearish for the dollar than a dovish Fed and an improving global economy. Like, those two things together are about as dovish for the dollar, both from a supply perspective and also a demand perspective, as it could possibly get. And that's what's, that's been the driving, two of the driving forces of asset markets. Again, you need to, when you think about investing, you know, if you're going to play the I think therefore game, which again, I think is a harder game to play. And quite frankly, a lot of the best institutional investors in the world fail at that game. But if you're going to play the I think therefore game, you have to understand what the base rate is, what the Bayesian priors are. You know, the themes that are really contributing to the development of asset markets and have been for quite a while are the resilient U.S. economy theme, the immaculate disinflation and the immaculate slackening we've seen in the U.S. labor market and U.S. inflation data. We've seen immaculate disinflation globally. We've seen green shoots globally. And then we've seen China front-loading policy support. If you want to see a significant change in asset markets, you need to start knocking down these things like bowling balls, and or bowling pins rather, and replacing them with different themes. Once you replace them with different things, market regime changes, you know, the direction of price and volatility changes for a lot of different asset markets, because the supply and demand for different asset markets will change. And so that's how you got to think about this. Understand what the base rates are, understand what the Bayesian prior is, so that you're looking for the proper data that allows you to understand when those bowling pins are getting knocked down. And that's something we do 6 days a week for our clients here at 42 Macro.
Fantastic stuff. Darius, this was fantastic conversation. So good. And we're really going to have to be laser focused on that inflation data. As you said, this is going to be a really important couple of weeks for the markets.
Absolutely, Maggie. I appreciate being here. Appreciate everyone for joining. And best of luck to everybody. We'll catch you back here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for the great questions. Great discussion today, both questions and chat. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow for Michael Howell. So in the meantime, take care and good luck out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.